You'd like, you can go ahead and turn to Luke 7. Luke chapter 7. It's been maybe 3 or 4 months back now. A couple brothers asked if at some point I would teach a lesson on gambling. And they have probably thought that I had totally forgotten about that by now. And I didn't. It just finally worked it in. So that's what I want us to talk about this morning. What is the Bible's attitude toward gambling? Because if we ask someone who approves of it, they may say, hey, look, the Bible does not say thou shalt not gamble. You can't show me anywhere that it does. And it is true that those exact words are not going to be found. But the Bible doesn't have to say those exact words to show us how it feels about a certain topic. For example, if we were to go to Matthew 5, verse 27, we will never see the words that say, thou shalt not look at internet pornography. But can I look at other scriptures that show me that it's inappropriate? Well, sure. In Matthew 5, 27, you have heard that it was said of old, you shall not commit adultery. But I say to you that whoever looks at a woman to lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart. Well, from that verse, clearly, pornography is shown to be wrong. So what I want us to do this morning is look at some principles that the Bible does teach and make applications to the idea of gambling and come away seeing the idea that God wants us to see. We can make a good judgment about topics like this. Let's start with a definition. What is it? What is gambling? It's nothing new. It has been around for a long, long time. Ancient times, the Greeks and the Jews threw dice. The Romans would bet on gladiatorial battles. They would bet on chariot races. They'd bet on anything. The Germanic tribes bet with their own liberty. They would bet themselves as slaves. That was the wager that they made, their own lives. So it's been around for a long, long time. According to World Book Encyclopedia, here's a definition. Gambling is betting on the outcome of a future event. Gamblers usually bet money or something else of value as a stake on the outcome they predict. When the outcome is settled, the winner takes the loser's stakes. So there are three characteristics that are involved. There's an uncertain event that is to be determined. There is a bet or a wager placed. And there is a winner and a loser. And when you have those characteristics, you have gambling. And I had up here on a list and just some examples of it. Lotteries would qualify as that. Casino games certainly would. Betting on things like horse races and dog races, that would. Raffles would meet the qualification. And then people kind of say, well, hey now, easy, buddy. Satan makes things look innocent. But the principle's still there. We'll talk about that more a little later. I want to start by looking at what gambling is not. Let's look at some things that may involve a risk, but they're not gambling as we've defined it earlier. Taking a risk is not gambling. Farming is risky. Anyone here who has ever farmed will tell you that. The farmers where we grew up will be more than happy to tell you, hey, it's a risk. You take a risk when you go out there. But I started you in another place. But Psalm 104, I just want to just read a verse. Farming is absolutely a noble profession, and it is something that God approves of. Psalm 104, verse 14. I should have brought you here first instead of Luke 7, but that's okay. Psalm 104, verse 14. He causes the grass to grow for the cattle and vegetation for the service of man, that he may bring forth food from the earth. See, God approves of that. So even though there's a risk involved, still, certainly nothing that would be dishonorable to God in any way. Driving to worship this morning, you took a risk, didn't you? Have you seen these people drive? You took a risk when you got on the highway, and yet the Lord expects us to assemble. Hebrews 10, verses 24 and 25, we understand that. So just simply taking a risk is not gambling. What about buying stock? That comes up sometimes. Stock does fluctuate, but it's not gambling. When you buy stock, you purchase ownership in a company. You buy 100 shares of Coca-Cola, guess who you are? You are now an owner of Coca-Cola. You buy an interest in that company and you receive ownership, so you purchase something with that. Insurance, kind of similar. Buying insurance, you are purchasing a thing of value, and both parties benefit. The insurance company gets a premium from you, you get protection and peace of mind that you purchase from them. So there is that dynamic there. Sweepstakes are not gambling because there's no wager. This company just decides, let's go with Coca-Cola again. They decide they want to give stuff away. Well, that's their right. They can give away to whomever they want to, and they can randomly choose. No wager was placed there. Gambling is not determined by the amount of the wager. This comes up sometimes. Well, I mean, we were playing cards. We were just playing for a little bit. That doesn't make the decision. What if I were to do that with any other thing? I said, well, the amount wasn't much, so it shouldn't be wrong. I only cheated on my wife one time. What's the big deal? It was just once. I only stole a pack of gum from that gas station. Why are you guys so mad at me, officer? It was just a pack of gum. I only killed that one guy. I mean, there are billions of people on this planet. Nobody likes him anyway. It was just one. See how ridiculous it gets when we apply it to other things? The amount doesn't determine whether or not it's right or wrong. Let's talk about why it's wrong. Go back to Luke 7. Luke chapter 7. If something clearly violates Bible principles, then we should say with confidence that it's wrong. And it's not something that we should take part in. Sometimes God doesn't come right out and spell out everything for us. Sometimes He expects us to use the brains He gave us and make some applications from what He's taught. He has confidence in us that we've got enough sense that we can put two and two together and figure things out. I'll give you an example. Luke 7. Go to verse 19. And John the Baptist, calling two of his disciples to him, sent them to Jesus, saying, "Are you the coming one, or do we look for another?" When the men had come to him, they said, "John the Baptist has sent us to you, saying, 'Are you the coming one, or do we look for another?'" And that very hour he cured many of infirmities, afflictions, and evil spirits, and to many blind he gave sight. Jesus answered and said to them, "Go and tell John the things that you have seen and heard, that the blind see, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, and the dead are raised. The poor have the gospel preached to them." You know what he didn't do? He didn't come out and answer their question. Are you the one, or do we need to look for somebody else? Jesus does not say, "Yes, I am the one." What does he do? He goes out, and he heals the sick, and he cleanses lepers, and he's raised the dead, and he's done all these things. And he says, "Now you go back and you tell John what you've seen." Did he answer their question? Yes. Did he answer it with a thou shalt not? No. He showed examples that answered the question for him. Now, can those disciples of John figure out that this is the one? From the fact that the dead are raised and the sick are healed? Yeah, yeah. And we can do the same thing. We can put these pieces together and figure these things out. Okay, let's talk about some principles that gambling would violate, some Bible principles. It's poor stewardship. A steward is a keeper of goods. He's not the owner of those goods. He is the manager, the one who's been placed in charge of those things. In the Middle Ages, stewards would have control over someone's whole property. I mean, their animals, their homes, all of their possessions. The steward would answer to the master for those things. They weren't his blessings, but he had charge over them. We're the same way. We have been entrusted with many things as Christians. How are we stewarding them? How are we treating them? Turn to 1 Peter 4. Let's look at verse 10 together. First Peter 4, verse 10, "As each one has received a gift, minister it to one another as good stewards of the manifold grace of God." Now, you can make an application if you like and say, well, this is specifically talking about miraculous spiritual gifts. It would include that. But wouldn't it include every gift, every ability, everything you've been entrusted with, everything you have, every blessing you have? Doesn't God expect us to use those to minister to one another and to do His will and to do good, understanding that it's a gift from Him. We're to be good stewards of what we have. Physical things, talents, whatever it is. Is gambling good stewardship? And as we go through this, let's just be honest. I mean, don't try to cover up something if we might want to justify it. Just be honest. And is gambling good stewardship? In lotteries, you have, I mean, last time I checked, about a 1 in 15 million chance of winning a jackpot. Would you do that with your retirement? Let's say you've got an agent who says, okay, I'm going to help you invest your retirement. I've got a great plan. It will give you so much more. It'll multiply your retirement. You've only got a 1 in 15 million chance of it working. And if that one happens, man, you're going to blow it up. Now, if all the other ones happen, you lose everything. But you've got a great chance. Would you take your retirement and entrust it to this guy? Please say no. Surely we wouldn't. That's bad stewardship, right? The same principle would apply for these things. And maybe it says something about me. I was reading a review just in studying for this, and I just started laughing. This guy wrote a review, and the title of it was, "These three casinos have very, very poor odds of winning." And I read it and said, well, duh. Well, what did you expect? How? The casino in Atmore that was built a few years ago, multi-million dollar project. Guess how long it took them to pay it off? 1 year. 1 year they completely paid off the construction loan for that multi-million dollar building. How was that? Do you like your chances of winning? They are not in the business of making us rich. They are in the business of making them rich. It's not good stewardship. It is, the deck is stacked against you, to use that phrase. So there's one. Another thing to consider is the addictive nature of it. The fact that there's such a thing as Gamblers Anonymous should tell us something. I mean, stuff like that doesn't exist unless there's a reason for it. Most of us know people who have struggled with gambling. I do in my family. Oh, man. And here's the thing. There are people who have made such wise decisions in my family when it comes to business. They would never buy on credit for a long time. They would save up. They would be patient. And when the people around them were just getting stuff, they'd say, no, we don't want to pay all that extra interest. We're going to wait. And we're either going to pay for it in cash or either put a huge down payment on it so we don't have to pay as much interest. That's wise. We'll be patient rather than it cost us more. That is wise. And then those same people have gotten caught up in gambling and blow thousands of dollars a month to casinos. And you just think, what happened? Because it's addictive. That's why. And it's extremely addictive. And I am not going to... I'll just be honest with you. Before I was a Christian, I used to go to casinos with my dad. It is alluring. Don't let anybody fool you into thinking that it's not. It is absolutely... They make it that way. It's appealing. And even when you go there, and I would go and say, all right, I'm going to spend this much money. And then that's the end of it. And if I win something, I'm going to win, and I'm going to stop, and I'm not going to give any of it back. Oh, please, Lance, who are you kidding? I would go, and there was a time I won something. I won like $50, and I said, sweet, all right, I'm going to put it in my pocket, and I'm going to sit here, and I'm not going to do anything else. Well, Dad wasn't ready to go. So I was there for 2 hours, staring at the ceiling. Well, I got bored. Guess what I did when I got bored? I gave them back all that money and 20 more. And they knew that. They knew that I would. That's the way it's designed. And it is a thrill. That thrill of the ding, 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 and all that. So, oh, look, I won. No, you didn't. You gave them 50. They gave you 5. Is that winning? But we get into it. We get caught up in the thrill of it. How do you think places like that look so nice and make so much money? They're not geared to lose. They are geared to win. A dear family member came up to me and she said, but they do so much good for me. She said, do you see this? I have a certificate for a pedicure. It was free. And I just smiled and I said, was it free? She said, well, no, I paid a lot of money. I lost a lot of money there, and they sent it to me. I said, yeah, they know. They know those things, and they keep doing them to bring them back. I read an employment, what an application for employment for one of the casinos. Employees are to go out of their way to make you feel loved, especially older women, so you will stay longer and come back and feel like this is your home. How about that? How about that? Surely that doesn't work, though. We know it does. We know this alluring is there. Paul makes the point in 1 Corinthians 6, verse 12, when something other than God brings us under its power, it's wrong. Nothing should bring us under its power. An addiction, this or whatever it is, it becomes a new master. And God doesn't want that. He won't tolerate that. Turn to Colossians 3. A third point. Gambling is covetousness at its root. It really is. The gambler seeks to win what is not rightfully his. He seeks to win at the expense of others. Colossians 3, verse 5. Therefore, put to death your members which are on the earth, fornication, uncleanness, passion, evil desire, and covetousness, which is idolatry. Because of these things, the wrath of God is coming upon the sons of disobedience. Covetousness connected to idolatry there. Turn to Matthew 7. This one to me is the biggest one. If we'll just consider it. Matthew chapter 7. Gambling violates Jesus' teaching to love one another. And if we'll look at it and step back and look at it clearly, it becomes obvious. And we'll talk a little more about it, but let's read a few verses. Matthew 7, verse 12. Therefore, whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them, for this is the law and the prophets. Turn to Matthew 22. Matthew 22. Jesus has been asked the question, what is the great commandment in the law? And he answers in 37, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment. But look at 39. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. We read earlier in Philippians. I'm going to read it again. Appreciate Richard reading that for us. I'm just going to read one verse. Philippians 2, verse 4. Let each of you look out not only for his own interest, but also for the interest of others. Do we take verses like that seriously? Or do we just read them because they're nice verses? If you take it to heart, am I treating others like I want to be treated when I am taking from them? They don't want to lose it, but I'm taking it from them. It's an effort by me to beat you out of what you don't want to give. Consider, it's not the normal ways of exchange. It's not labor where I give you work and you pay me a wage. That's absolutely justified. It's not even exchange where you have something of value and I have something of value, so we swap. It's not even a gift where you say, I just want to give you stuff. And I say, okay, I'll take it. It's none of those things. It's an effort by me to beat you out of something that you don't want to give. And this is the thing that has stuck with me. And I remember myself there in the casino. Whenever I won, you know what I should have done? I should have looked around at all the other people on that floor and said, thanks, guys, because I just took that from you. I won, but you had to lose so that I could. Is that Matthew 7? Is that Matthew 22? Well, I love you so much that I will do your good. I want what is best for you above everything. Is that the kind of heart that we see that goes into gambling? I had a quote up here. Even though it's consented to, does that make it okay? And the quote I had was, gambling is stealing by consent, just like dueling is murder by consent. You guys remember dueling? We don't do it anymore. It's not allowed. But used to, it was legal. You walk up to me in the street and you shoulder bump me and you dishonor me and I don't like it. Now at noon, we shall meet with our swords and I'll take care of this. And if I killed you right there in the middle of the street, it was legal according to the laws of the land. But what was it? It's still murder. I just killed you. So just because we consent to something doesn't mean that it's right and moral and okay. If two unmarried adults decide to have a sexual relationship, it's consensual. Is it okay in God's sight? Certainly not. Consider these things. One final point about it. Gambling breeds other sins. And I wish my PowerPoint was working just so I could lay this up here for you. I'm going to read some numbers. This is from a report that was taken in 2006. It's called Casinos, Crime, and Community Cost. 5 years after a casino appears, there is always, always a dramatic increase in crime. They went back. The casino started in 1992, if I remember right, on Biloxi. And they just measured it 5 years later. And so they've looked at that. Here's some of the numbers. Robbery goes up 136% in that time span. 5 years. Aggravated assault goes up 91%. Auto theft, 78%. Burglary, 50%. Rape, 21%. And murder, 12%. The stuff goes together. It does. It's just proven statistical fact that it does. The atmosphere at places like casinos promotes other sins. When I was sitting there, they would bring drinks around. They would bring alcoholic drinks for you. Now, what that's going to go well, isn't it? Here you are, surrounded with the opportunity to gamble, and they bring you alcohol. Well, that's a recipe for good decision-making, isn't it? They know that. They understand that. Not to mention that the attire of the serving girls was certainly inappropriate. 1967, senior vice president I worked with brought me a contract. This is a player's contract from the Green Bay Packers. It was so cool to me. He knows I love football, and so I was just going through actual 1967 contract that the players had to sign if you wanted to play for the Packers. And in one of the back pages, this is what it says. This is a quote from it. Players are not to spend time around loan sharks, gamblers, or any other unsavory characters. And what amazes me is that the Green Bay Packers organization in 1967 can figure out it's a bad idea and leads to bad things, but many people today just kind of shrug it off. They were saying, if you're going to play for us, you're not going to do this. It leads to trouble. It makes us look bad. No, sir. Will we be honest about things? Now, I want to close with some excuses that are offered. And as we make one more point, would any of us say, Lord, we want to shine our light for you today. Brethren, let's get together and shine our light for the Lord by going to the casino and gambling. Do those two parts of the sentence go together? I mean, just honestly thinking, is this how I'm going to glorify my Creator? To be involved in that thing. Some excuses offered. Lotteries and raffles help the kids. The ends don't justify the means. And here's the honest thing. If I'm really interested in helping the kids, can I do that without the gambling part? It's easy, right? Just write them a check. If I really want to support the schools, I am pretty sure none of the schools around here will say, no, I don't want to take your money. I don't want your $5. Of course they do. It's helpful. They need that stuff. If it's really about that, if it's really about building up the community, donate to some community organization. But it's not really about that, is it? Not if we're honest. It's not. Another excuse for my family in talking about this, hey, it's just for fun. It's what I do for fun. You do what you do for fun. I do what I do for fun. But this fun violates Bible principles. Not the least of which is preying on the weaknesses of others. Is that godly? To prey on people who have a problem and struggle with this, preying on their weaknesses and taking advantage of them. Can I find some other way to have fun? And then one last one. It doesn't hurt anybody. It hurts the people whose money I win. Will I support a self-destructive habit? It hurts in that way. Now turn to Matthew 23. It also hurts God. If I am taking advantage of gullible people, that is not pleasing my God. Matthew 23, verse 37. And this is just this lament that Jesus cries out to Jerusalem. Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the one who kills the prophets and stones those who were sent to her. How often I wanted to gather your children together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, but you were not willing. He says, I sent prophets. I sent others to you, and you stoned them. When you hurt others, it hurt me, Jesus said. When we take advantage of other people, when we encourage bad behavior in other people, it hurts him. And ultimately, if I'm involved in behavior that hurts him, it's going to hurt me at judgment. Let's look at one last thing. Ecclesiastes 12. It is obvious that there is a connection between the behavior of gambling and covetousness. We've talked about that. But instead of talking about what not to do, I want to finish by talking about what should we be? What should we look like? We ought to be pure. We ought to be righteous and holy. And we ought to love those things that are good and build other people up and help them in this life to get to the next life, to get to heaven. That should be my focus. Ecclesiastes 12. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is man's all. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is man's all. If I fear Him, I'll keep myself pure. And I'll do everything I can to try to help other people keep themselves pure as well. Go ahead and get your songbooks out. I'm going to read you a quote while you're doing that. Tertullian was a Christian who lived in the second century. Wrote a lot, and a lot of it's recorded for us. He said this, "If you say you are a Christian when you are a dice player, you say what you are not, because you are a partner with the world." Now, that's somebody in the second century, close to the apostles in the days near when Christ walked the earth. And the idea there is, don't say one thing and then do actions that work against it. Don't claim to be pure and holy and then do things that would suggest a lack of purity. It makes Jesus look bad. And it's certainly going to make the gospel of Christ harder to spread. We've been talking about that subject of gambling, but just take it across the board. If there's any way that I'm not pure like I should be, and we know that, in any way, fix it. He wants us to. He wants us to be clean and pure. We can serve Him, but we have to be clean. Do we need to do that this morning? Do you need to repent? Do I need to repent? Let's do it now with our brethren here. If we can help, certainly will. Please come as we stand and sing.